Well, today, great story in the Old Testament. In fact, it's an entire book, and it's a short one, but the book of Esther. If you don't know the whole story of the book of Esther, I'm going to paraphrase it till we get to chapter 4, okay? So the book of Esther it takes place during the exile of the Israeli nation. So the Judah has been exiled into captivity. Their enemies have conquered Jerusalem. They took all of the people out of Jerusalem, out of the land of Judah, and now they are captives in this foreign land. And it is a difficult thing for every Jew who wants to be in his homeland, wants to be in Jerusalem. And so the story begins in an interesting way. The king, in a probably foolish situation, had his queen Vashti deposed. He removed her from being queen, and out of probably some bad advice he got from his advisors, and so they needed to replace the queen. And they searched the land high and low to find suitable women that could possibly fill this role as queen. Well, there were many, and Esther, who was a Jew, she also, Esther was her captivity name, so that wasn't her true name. Her true name was Hadassah. And she was instructed by her uncle. Now, Hadassah had neither mother or father. So it's not explained, but they were gone. She was an orphan, and her uncle, Mordecai, adopted her. And he instructed her. This is very important, he told her, that you conceal the identity of your Jewish origins. And so the name Esther is the one that she went by. It's the name of the book. But her Jewish name was Hadassah. And she was one of the young ladies that were selected to be presented to the king. And after, they were put into beauty treatments for some time. And Esther found favor in the one who, her handler, if you will, was helping her prepare for this one night with the king. And that she, among others, may be selected. And she found favor with this Ethiopian man, and he provided her extra beauty treatments and preparations and helped her, coached her, mentored her into how to please the king. And it's an interesting story. Esther is presented to the king, and she is selected to be queen in place of Vashti. Now, this is very, very important. You think, well, you know, is this sort of some beauty pageant story or, you know, some sort of fairy tale, you know, with, you know, they lived happily ever after? No, it's absolutely important, and it shows the hand of God in our situations. And God is thinking far ahead of us. He has everything planned, and there's nothing by coincidence. There's nothing by mistake. And so Esther is now in the place of the queen. And so, meanwhile, an ancient enemy of the Jews, the Bible describes him as an Agagite, and that goes clear back into the book of 1 Kings, and that King Saul was supposed to annihilate this enemy nation, and their king was called Agag. That was his title, and Saul disobeyed the Lord, and instead of eliminating them entirely, he spared their lives, spared the lives of Agag. And Haman, who is the Agagite, he is the line of the royal family, he is also now in this foreign country, and it still harbors ancient hatred of the Jews going way back. And he hatches a plot because he discovers that Esther's uncle, and not realizing that there is a relationship there, okay, that Mordecai is Esther's uncle. He discovers that he is a Jew, and that ancient hatred just begins to boil over, and Mordecai is aware of who Haman is, that he is an Agagite, and he does not bow down to him. He doesn't pay him the respect that he craves. And so he hatches this evil plot that he will not only get rid of Mordecai, but he will eliminate the entire Jewish nation. Now, there's so many subplots to this story, okay? And one of them at this point in the story is the fact that when we are not complete in our obedience to the Lord, is to our peril, okay? Because King Saul was not complete in his obedience to the Lord in annihilating this nation, it now comes back to bite the Jewish nation. And this Haman, who would have been king, who would have been in line for the king, and now will never realize that, it harbors this resentment, hatred, anger, and he hatches this plot that all of the Jews will be destroyed. And so it's a very serious matter. He talks the king into signing this decree. And as we learned last time, when the king signs a decree, it can't be rescinded. It can't be revoked. And so he signs a decree that the Jews can be annihilated throughout the kingdom. And there is great distress and great concern. So it's kind of at this point in the story that we rejoin it in the scriptures here, is that a plan is put into motion. Mordecai contacts Queen Esther, and he says, this plot, he says, don't think, and we'll read this, that you're going to survive in the palace if something is not done. And so let's pick that up at Esther chapter 4, and we're going to start reading verse 10 and read through chapter 5, verse 4. So it says, then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command. This is her handler, okay? Hathach is the one who's been her mentor and coach. Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command for Mordecai. All the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king who has not been called, he has but one law. Put all to death. So, little detail here I failed to mention is that Queen Esther, even though she was the queen, she had no access to the king unless he requested her specifically. She couldn't just show up in the courtroom and just say, "Hey, King, I need to talk to you." That would be a death sentence, and so there's a complication here. That Esther needs to speak to the king, but she has not been invited, and that's where this comes up. So it says that all the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death except to the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. So there's a problem. I can't talk to the king at risk of my own life. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think that in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" That's a key phrase in the entire book of Esther there, that perhaps you have come to the kingdom for this specific moment. Okay, God has destiny on your life. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Great conviction, great courage. Chapter 5. Now it happened on the third day that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house, facing the entrance of the house. So it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court that she found favor. Just if you've got your Bible open, just circle that word favor, okay? She found favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom." So Esther answered, "If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet I have prepared for him." And this plan is hatched. And it all pivoted on this one thing that I had you underline or circle in your Bible, and that's this word, favor. I want to talk about favor, and you read the book of Esther, and I encourage you to do it. It's a short book. I think it's only 6 chapters. And if you read it with this in mind, how Esther garnered favor at every opportunity, okay? And I think sometimes we don't even think about how valuable a thing like favor is. But in this case, all along the way, when Esther was selected to be part of the group that would be presented to the king to become queen, it was her favor she had with Hathach, her handler, that garnered her the opportunity to prepare in ways that would please the king. And because of the favor she had with Hathach, she gained the advantage and became queen. And the fact that she now had this influence and had this place inside the palace is a key part of the story. And her uncle Mordecai points it out. He says, you know, all of this has come to pass for this moment. This is why you are here. It's not so you can just be queen and that's a neat thing and you can, you know, put that down in your scrapbook and, you know, show it to your kids someday. That's not why this happened. You became queen for this moment in saving the race that you are from, your people, the Jews. God has designed this, and it all hinged on favor. And then in this moment, when she places her life on the line, and she enters the presence of the king uninvited, which is a death sentence unless you have favor with the king. And as we read, he holds out the golden scepter, and she is able to speak to the king. Again, a very pivotal point, but all pivots, what's the thing it pivots on? On the favor that God has placed on her towards the king. So I want to say this, is that do not underestimate the power of favor. You know, we kind of make light sometimes of people who have favor on their lives. And, you know, you think, oh, you know, you're just sucking up to the boss, or you're just, you know, trying to gain influence, or you're manipulating, or all of those things. And I think sometimes we think this idea of gaining favor is unimportant. But I want us to look at the story and see how this is absolutely key to the story. In fact, in the story, the word favor is mentioned 9 times. Okay, 9 times in 6 chapters. 7 of the 9 times relates directly to the favor that Esther had on her life, which we read one of those statements, that she gained favor of the king. And then two, Esther uses this in her plan, and as we ended the story here, the portion that we read, this banquet that she is preparing for the king and for Haman, that she is going to expose Haman in this wicked plot that he has gained against the Jews to destroy them. And she, again, addresses the king, "If I have found favor in your sight, would you come to the banquet that I have prepared?" And that's twice that she uses that phrase to the king. So it's woven throughout the story that Esther's treatment of other people garnered her favor, which was key in a critical moment. And I think we don't really think of it in this story. And again, you know, as I approach these passages in the Bible Engagement Project, and we had no plan except to just start and just to move forward in this. It was Pastor Scott that pointed it out to me this week that last week was the Feast of Purim that originates here in the book of Esther. And so it's interesting that we land on this topic this week, because in the Jewish tradition, they celebrated the Feast of Purim, and that was the deliverance that they received from being annihilated by Haman and those who plotted with him. And so if we look into this and read this with an open mind, the whole success of this story is predicated upon favor. And an example for us as Christians, how we should act towards others. That we should always act in ways that are respectful, ways that are kind, ways that are thoughtful, ways that are courteous in looking out for other people, that we might garner favor, not for some sort of personal goal or anything like that, but favor for what we believe. Because we never know. We never know where people of influence are that if we have somehow earned their favor, how they could make decisions that affect us. And I think it behooves us to follow the example of Esther, and that our ways should be pleasing to those around us, and an example for us that and how we should live towards others who may not identify with our faith, but they would give us favor because of our example towards them. And we're not talking about patronizing, we're not talking about flattery, but we're talking about being genuinely good, kind, and generous people, because you never know when favor will be acted upon on your behalf. Jesus taught this kind of thing. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, he says this, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." What is Jesus teaching us here? Is that our behavior and response towards other people matters. And it's not just witnessing. You know, we can witness in so many ways. You know, there's the direct witness where we just tell people about our faith and their need of a Savior in Jesus Christ and the forgiveness of their sin. That's one way. But I think also there's a way to witness in how we live our lives and how we treat other people. You know, you can tell people all kinds of truth, but you treat them in a disrespectful way, you do great disservice to the witness of Christ. Jesus walked in this kind of favor. Luke chapter 2 and verse 52, there's a little summary statement there, and we probably overlook it, but I think it's really important. It says in Luke 2:52, it says, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. It's interesting how that word comes up. Favor. I think it matters, and I think it's something that we should be very, very conscious of. If we could understand the principle of favor, if we could live it, if we could cultivate it, favor may help us in ways we may never know until it matters. Proverbs 16:7 says this: when a man's ways pleases the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. It's our behavior. How do we respond to other people? How do people perceive us? Do they perceive us as hypocritical? You know, we say one thing, but we act another. Are we impatient? Are we kind to other people? Are we looking out for ourselves? Are we looking out for others as well? It's something that I think we need to model our behavior after. And as you become familiar with the story of Esther, and you see how this is woven throughout the story, clear to the moment that she exposes the wicked plot of Haman against her and her people, it was her favor with the king that turned that entire situation around. And the Jews, because the decree had been signed, the Jews were still destined for slaughter should anybody take up a sword against them. But because of the favor of the king, he wrote another decree that declared that the Jews could defend themselves, which they did, and there was no loss of life. And so the Jews not only survived, but they began to thrive. And Mordecai, who was specifically identified by Haman to be hung on a gallows, and there's I don't understand the term gallows, but Haman's hatred of Mordecai was so great that he constructed a gallows that Mordecai would be hung on, and it was 70 feet high. I don't understand that, but it was 70 feet high, and it was specifically designed for Mordecai. Well, guess who ended up being hung on the 70-foot gallows? It was Haman himself. He constructed his own gallows because of the turnaround in the situation, and Haman himself took his own life. Great, you know, it's just, if you love a good story, good drama and all that, the book of Esther is the one to read. There's so much material there. And I think maybe the message to us, we are living in a day that favor is going to play an important part for us. One of the news channels there were some political people there, and they were discussing Christian persecution. And even in our own country, the censoring and silencing of Christians, the Christian voice, the Christian message. I just thought, you know, we've never seen this to this extent in our country before. I think it was in Ethiopia just this past week or 2 weeks ago, that 800 Christians were beheaded at the largest Catholic church in Ethiopia. Their blood was spilled on the grounds of the largest Catholic church in Ethiopia. 800. We've never seen, there's more Christians being persecuted today than at any other time in history. And why? We hear so little about it. Nobody's outraged. The world is not outraged about this. The world, by their silence, is complicit in this ongoing persecution. And I think it's very, very important for us, and this is not to be run scared, this is not a fear sermon, but encouragement for us to live lives of favor. Not patronizing, not flattering people, but being just genuinely kind, generous, thoughtful, patient people living out our faith. As Jesus said, so they can see our good works and glorify our Father who is in heaven. And I think the second thought that comes out of this book of Esther that we want to talk about today is understanding the times and the moment in which we live. 2 Chronicles chapter 12 and verse 32, there's just a comment in there, and they're talking, it's kind of a listing of the tribes of Israel. And for some reason, the writer of Chronicles includes this little statement about the tribe of Issachar. 1 Chronicles 12:32 says, "And of the sons of Issachar, who had understanding of the times, to know what Israel ought to do." It's kind of out of character for that passage, but the writer of that passage thought it important enough to note that this tribe of Issachar understood the day and time in which they lived, and they could act accordingly. And I think that's good wisdom for us today, is that we know the times in which we live, and that we need to know what to do. Understanding informs response. Understanding is what makes the difference in working with people. In the book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, it was a book that was very, very popular not many years ago. Author Stephen Covey says this, it's habit number 5. He says, "Seek first to understand, then to be understood." Does that make sense? I'll repeat it again. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. So for it to be highly effective people in our interactions with people, our first response is to seek to understand others. And then we'll have earned the right to be heard and to be understood ourselves. And I think that's really important for us. I think that's what we all want. We all want to be understood. Mordecai understood the significance of Esther coming into a key place of influence. He knew the time in which he lived. And there in Esther 4:14. And yet, who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? He had discernment, he had understanding. One of the great gifts of the Spirit is discernment. Now, I don't know when the last time you heard a message on the gift of discernment. When you talk about the gifts of the Spirit, you know, my goodness, you know, there's gifts of healing, and there's gifts of tongues, there's interpretation of tongues, there's gifts of prophecy, and those garner our attention. But there are other great gifts in there as well. And one of the greatest that just doesn't really catch our attention is the gift of discernment. And I think that's absolutely key for us. It's often overlooked when compared to more demonstrative power gifts, but no less valuable. Discernment is what gives us insight into understanding. And I think that's a great tool to have in the times and the days in which we live. And then as we bring this to a close today, and we're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper here in just a few moments, and we'll invite you to participate with us. The third thought that comes out of this short book of Esther is that God always has a plan. God always has a plan. He's never caught off guard. He's never like, "Oh, I didn't expect that." God always has a plan. And here's the other half of the statement. God always has a plan, and it always involves us. It's not just something God just does out there, and we just get to walk in. God had a plan in Queen Esther's day, and it involved her. It involved her. She was key. God will never be outfoxed. He'll never be caught off guard. Man will never pull a fast one on God. But God's plan always involves you and I. You know, the critic who claims not to believe in God, you know, they'll point out terrible things that happen in the world. Say, you know, "I don't believe in God because, You say God is a loving God, and if God is a loving God, then why are there starving children? Why do bad things happen to good people? If God is a good God, and if God is in control like you say he is, then why do all of these things happen? I'll tell you the answer for that, is God has a plan. And that plan involves you. Anybody who tells you that, oh, I don't believe in God because, you know, kids go to bed at night not having anything to eat. And you say, you know what? God has a plan for that, and it involves you. Why do you notice that? Why does that bother you? Because God has put in your heart to do something about it. God has a plan. He always does. But it always involves us. It's not like we just get to stand on the side and wait to see what God's going to do. And so understanding every situation that brings concern or fear to our hearts, or we don't know what's going on, understand, it didn't catch God off guard. And because it's caught our attention, that's probably a clue that God intends to use us as an answer to the need. And it may garner, it may hinge on the favor that we have garnered with other people. And the time to garner favor is before it's needed. So those are my thoughts today as we bring this to a close. I'm going to invite you to stand.